Greetings. This is James Gillen with As You Wish Talk Radio. We've got another great show. I got a little news I wanted to get out first, and I wanted to talk a little bit about this bill. It's S-1867, and I hope people are following this bill and putting some pressure on your senators and congressmen and anybody else you can put pressure on, because this is pure insanity. And McGovern and Lovett, you know, watching these guys trying to push this bill and promote this bill, and the way it was done in secrecy and just thrown on everybody and bullied through, it's just unbelievable. But when you listen to these guys talking, Rand Paul, Ron Paul, Senator Kirk, Dianne Feinstein is writing addendums to this, trying to get it changed. But basically the way it sets right now is that if you're belligerent or you're a dissident or you've got an attitude about the behavior of our government, which, you know, probably 90% of the people on this planet do, you can be arrested and detained forever and sent off to Guantanamo Bay. And the military can come in and step in anytime you want. And it's really funny, their definition of possible terrorists are anybody missing a finger, you know, anybody storing food, anybody having guns. I mean, a lot of people just inherited their family guns, you know, their hunting rifles and shotguns and things like that. And they may not even hunt, but they have their father's or grandfather's, you know, old guns, things like that. It's just amazing. Any of these things are they can actually brand you a terrorist, pack you up, and you're gone. So, I know people are very upset about this. There's a lot of people moving forward. And just watching these guys try to promote this bill, I was looking for these little tails to be coming out from under their jackets there, you know, or some little horns to be growing on their heads, because, you know, this is just beyond insanity. And, you know, basically anybody that, you know, even senators have warned them that this is a treasonous act. You know, what you're doing is, it flies into the face of the Constitution. It totally trashes it. So, you know, they gave an oath to protect the Constitution, you know, serve the people, and this does not serve the people in any way whatsoever. But you're going to see this over and over again, people just, you know, using the fear card to steal our rights and our freedoms, and this is just, it's hit the apex right now. But anyway, that being said, also too, I sent a thing out on the email, and our next guest is also helping Alex Collier out as well. And he's coming to some hard times, and he's living in a pop-top tent with no heat and freezing his buns off. And, you know, Alex has stood up for all of us, and he stood up and he's called a spade a spade. And he's been a pioneer and a very outspoken voice in the UFO community, and I always love what he has to say. And, you know, he's been really warning us about things to come and things like this bill and other things that some groups have in store for us. So, you know, if you can send Alex some help, we'll put that up on the site as well. We'll have that up on the website. But we've got you know, we've actually helped him out, and we've got several people offering him a house right now. So I don't know how that's going to work out, but I think it's going to be good. And we're really hoping that he pulls through this and gets back on his feet and stands tall as he always has been. But anyway, our next guest is Robert Stanley. And Robert Stanley is he's formerly a corporate journalist with Honda Research and Development in Torrance, California. And he's currently the editor of Unicus Magazine at unicusmagazine.com. And he's also the author of Close Encounters on Capitol Hill and Covert Encounters in Washington, D.C., and is the host of the Unicus Radio Hour. And he served as a correspondent for America's Morning News and America's Radio News Network. And he's traveled to dozens of countries and has read hundreds of books and thousands of articles during his lifelong pursuit of modern and ancient mysteries over the past 30 years. Robert's quest for unique ideas and information has led him to the research and write about many controversial topics. His ongoing investigations have been featured on television, radio, and in print. He's a native of Los Angeles, California. He grew up in Malibu, and in 2008 moved to southern New England, where he now lives with his wife, son, and dog. He enjoys surfing, motorcycles, tennis, photography, and composing music. And if you want to check out some other links, he's got his you can check out his media appearances, his stock photographs, and his music all are on the website. So anyway, without any further ado, I want to welcome Robert to the show. Robert, are you with us?
Thank you for having me, James.
Oh, thanks for coming on the show.
It's my pleasure.
I imagine you've been following this S-1867, this bill.
Yeah, it's quite tragic to see how far they've come out of the closet, they being the demons of Washington, D.C. They are, it's not funny. I mean, I'm kind of snickering because I have a feeling that they know that their time is coming and mm-hmm. that they're taking these desperate measures to, as you say, generate as much fear as possible, and also to posture themselves in a way that makes them feel like they are still in control when, in fact, they're losing control.
Mm-hmm. You know, that's my sentiments exactly. It's like a last-ditch effort for tyranny, and most of us are fully aware of this program that's been going on for quite some time, and it seems to be hitting the apex now, and it's going to come up for everybody to see just who's who and what their agendas are.
Yeah, well, you know, they didn't have to pass that bill in order to do what they claim that they're going to do is just round up anybody that they feel is a threat to the state. Their system of it's entirely corrupt, as we now all know. And what I began exposing back in 2005. The fact that UFOs were visiting Washington, D.C. covertly. And I did that because of photographic evidence that had been provided to me by a credible source. In other words, 35-millimeter film, not Photoshop. We're talking 35-millimeter film that was authenticated of UFOs swarming over and even landing on the Capitol building in July 16, 2002, in the middle mm-hmm. of the night. So when I published those photographs along with an analysis and an article internationally in July of 2005, I was visited by a military black helicopter over, well, at the time I was living in Los Angeles in a quiet residential neighborhood, and I was absolutely floored to see this helicopter show up in the afternoon. It was hovering, it was doing circles around the house, I mean, like really low around the house, under 500 feet. And then it stopped over the driveway. I was so low, I literally, when I walked outside, I could have tossed a rock at it and hit it. And I'm standing there, like, looking at them, and it was completely blacked out the windows and whatnot. I don't know who was in it. But I got the message, you know, that they were kind of pissed off that I was showing everybody in the world at these pictures, you know. And mm-hmm. I had the presence of mind to run inside the house and grab a small digital camera and snap a picture as these guys were leaving. And just to prove, you know, I mean, I don't know if you've been to the website to see these pictures of the UFOs in Washington, D.C., but this helicopter I'm telling you about, that's one of the pictures there because it's relevant to the story of what we're discussing here, is that, you know, clearly the government is not representing the will of the people. It's an elite group of humans that I believe are covertly in cahoots with the negative extraterrestrials that are here.
Mm-hmm. My research has been going in the same direction. And, you know, it's unbelievable. We've had the same experience, and we have a lot of full footage of these black helicopters doing the same thing, mm-hmm. Circling around the house, opening up their door, filming the entire property. Mm-hmm. Some came over that looked like Blackhawks with turrets underneath and weird gear, you know, strange gear, and you felt this energy after they came over. Some kind of an energy was pulsing out of this thing. You could see a light pulsing out of this. It looked like a pie pan underneath the helicopter that had turrets on it and different, I don't know what it had on it. And these things are set up for night flying. They have the, all these special sensors for, you know, checking out any kind of magnetic anomalies or any other disturbances. And you know, it's kind of amazing because I've had Air Force base commanders here and they have seen these helicopters buzzing us on a regular basis. And I asked one of them, I said, so who are these guys? And he said, well, he said, basically, when they come in and land, we can't even go near them. We have to stay a certain distance away from them, and they have their own crew, and they fuel, you know, they fuel up their copters themselves, and you know, we can't even look at them, we can't take any pictures, we can't go near them. There's very strict rules around these guys, and they seem to have the ability to go anywhere they want and land anywhere they want and fuel up and take off again.
Well, that can't be good.
No.
You know, if you judge a person by their actions, like, what do you guys have to hide exactly? And why are you intimidating us? We haven't done anything illegal. If so, charge us. I mean, come on. Is it illegal to have contact with or communication with extraterrestrials? I mean, you know, they're not being clear on this at all.
Yeah. Well, you know, basically it's okay if you contact the negative ones and go in cahoots with them and start back engineering their technology to you know, use for weapons. That's fine as long as you're part of the good old boys club. But if you start contacting the benevolent ones, you're in big trouble.
Yeah, well, I definitely had contact out here in New England. And about a year after I was here, situated here, I was doing a show much like this one. I was doing an interview about the book, the first book I wrote, Close Encounters on Capitol Hill, appropriately titled. And I was getting kind of frustrated, James, actually. I was thinking, you know, this isn't working. I mean, two, three years into this project, and I still wasn't getting the response that I was expecting. You know, like, hey, come on, we've got pictures of them landing on Capitol Hill. Hello, is anybody paying attention? Why doesn't anybody care? And So after the show, I walked outside and I looked up at the stars and I said to them, are you guys serious? You expect me to do this by myself? Can't you help me? You know, I mean, what's going on? And I mean, I was just frustrated. Okay, I was blowing off some steam. I didn't expect anything, honestly.
Yeah.
But the next morning, so like 12 hours later, okay, it was 10 o'clock at night or so. And then 10 o'clock in the morning, I walked back out, same spot in the yard, more or less, and beautiful, beautiful, sunny, clear sky. Not a cloud in the sky. And I'm standing there with my dog. He's, you know, patrolling the yard, whatever. And I noticed that there was a jet taking off behind the house because I'm kind of near one of the airports. But what caught my eye or attention was that the jet was extremely low. So it was rather loud as it was taking off. And I'd never seen that before. And it was kind of off the flight plan, whatever. And as I'm watching that, I saw this, it looked like Venus, but it was during the daytime, man. It was 10 o'clock in the morning, and I'm looking at this golden star, and then the jet passed, and then I recognized that, oh, my God, the star is moving. And I thought, whoa, wait a minute, and it was actually coming towards the house. So I ran into my house, and I grabbed a very good Nikon camera, had a 200-millimeter lens on it, and I ran back outside and to the same spot, and I was so amazed because it actually stopped over the house, maybe, I don't know, 1,000 feet over the house, and it stopped, and it was really brilliant golden color sphere, and I took four pictures of it. I lowered my camera to look at some of the, because I was used shooting in manual mode, and I looked back up, and the thing's gone, visually gone. Now, remember, I told you it was a completely clear day. There wasn't a cloud in the sky. There was it either went stealth mode, visually, you know, optically it went away, couldn't see it, or it literally shot off, and But either way, after that, I thought, oh, my God, they heard what I said. And this was their way of just letting me know that, you know, we heard you and we literally can be right over your house if needs be. So that was their way of just sort of giving me some sort of support or a heads up, like, you know, acknowledgement, like, yeah, we hear you. It was helpful. It was helpful. And you know, what else was weird, though, James, is that the picture didn't look like what I saw. And so I, having worked on these photographs with at Washington, D.C., we'd come up with some understanding that if you adjust the contrast and the brightness, not alter the photograph at all, but you just basically it's a reductive analysis where you take away certain frequencies of light, you can actually see more of the detail of the craft because they're emitting such a tremendous energy frequencies that, you know, the camera is picking up stuff we don't see quite often. Yeah. Okay, so when I did that, I was able to get a better read on the, I could actually see the craft within the energy field, because it looked like, okay, so I saw a golden sphere, almost like a giant BB in the sky, and but what the camera picked up, it looked like a fuzzy white tennis ball, and I thought, man, what, it was a slight bluish-green tint to it. And I thought, man, that's weird. But when I just changed up the contrast and the brightness, you could see through the white energy field, whitish. Actually, it was multicolored, but mostly white. And you can see this spherical object inside the energy field. It's a trip. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's also on the website there. If you click on the book section for at unicusmagazine.com, you can click photographs about Washington, D.C. So I got the picture of all these UFOs and movies and videos of UFOs in Washington, D.C., plus I got the black helicopter over the house, and I got the UFO over the house. So, man, it's been a crazy time.
Yeah, I'll bet. I understand where you're coming from. I was really tired of all these ships just flying overhead, you know, and way up in the distance just kind of hanging out. And you know, I was just going, you know, this is nonsense, you know, what's my role in this? And I was having telepathic contact, and in the very beginning, I had a face-to-face experience, which was pretty phenomenal. And so I just was very clear. I said, you know, I want to know what this is about. What's my connection here? I said, I don't care if it kills me. I was at that point. I said, I want to know what this is about. And this beam of light came right through I was in the bathtub at the time and hit me in the chest. And I have photographs of this. It's really interesting. It left a big burn mark in the middle of my chest, but it was totally painless. What? Yeah, it didn't hurt at all. And the mark morphed from almost like a triangle to a heart shape and then had a golden film on it and then left and went away. And I had Joe Burks was here, who was a major person with CSETI.
Right.
And he's a, you know, emergency doctor, I think, or some kind of doctor. I'm not sure what he is. But, you know, he checked it out and he goes, you know, that looks like a radiation burn, you know. And he said, do you get sick or does it hurt or anything? And I said, no, I feel higher than a kite. You know, I don't have, you know, any of the symptoms But what they did was two things came in that beam. There was three golden balls of energy that hit me in the chest. Whoa. And it brought back all my memories of past lives, everything. It was just, it was crazy. Wow. And then they pulled me up on the ship and I had a face to face with one of these golden plasma beings, you know, that are on these big golden ships. And so I was frustrated with it. I was about ready to walk away from the whole thing. I just said, this is nuts. You know, playing all these games up there. Everybody was seeing the ships, and I was having telepathic message, but it just wasn't cutting it. You know, I wanted something a little more tangible, you know?
Yeah.
So I got it.
As you're talking, I'm reminded of a time. I met Alex in Malibu back in 1985, shortly after I'd had an encounter with a radiant being up in the mountains, not far from where Alex had moved into a trailer there on a ranch, and he was new to the area. And I guess word got around. We, you know, somehow a friend had bumped into Alex, and he says, "Alex, you got to meet my buddy Bob." You know, so anyway, we became good friends instantly. I mean, the day we met, I thought I knew him from somewhere, and it was sort of like picking up where we left off. But so we used to go up to he was living in the mountain, but there was a higher region of the mountain where I'd had my encounter, and it turns out there was also ancient megalithic ruins there of an ancient civilization, probably Lemuria. And we were having contact up there, close encounters with these ships, and sometimes they would beam the light on us. And these were not helicopters, folks. I'm telling you, these were UFOs. Okay, and it was right near a naval military base, so the whole thing was kind of bizarre. But anyway, one night I was hanging out with Alex, and it was late, and I had to go home. And I used to ride a motorcycle everywhere in those days. And so I'm riding down through the mountain at night, and I kept getting this feeling like I was being watched. And, I mean, it was just, if you've ever had that feeling, like, you know, the back of your neck kind of tingling. Like,
oh, yeah, just, yeah.
And, I mean, it was just, and it was kind of annoying because I'm trying to ride through the mountains, very twisty roads and whatnot. And I finally get to a straightaway area, and I look up to this one section of the mountain. I mean, not far from where I was riding. I mean, it was just off to my left as I'm riding down the hill. And I looked up to that section, and I said, hey, I know you're there. I said, you know, you don't have to be afraid of me. There's nothing I can do to harm you. You know, why don't you just show yourself? And suddenly the light on the craft went on, and I damn near wrecked my bike because I couldn't believe it. It's like, I mean, here I'm, I guess, I don't know what I was thinking, but man, it freaked me out because it wasn't scary. It just, it was such a shock to my mind that they really were there following me. That it was just, I'll never forget that feeling. It was like, hey, thanks for the confirmation. In fact, they shortly after they turned the light on, they could tell I was so freaked out, they turned the light back off. I mean, they were there for a few seconds, just long enough to say, yeah, you're right, and then stop with the light because I wasn't paying attention to the road, and I was freaking out so badly that they really heard me, you know, mentally, you know. I was just like, oh, my God. So, anyway, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, I had a fellow here that was a Kung Fu master and a Qigong master.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he was saying, he goes, I'm not going to go public till they bring the ships down. And he had about a $7,000 camera over his shoulder. And this was quite a few years ago, so it was top of the line. And, and so they did. These three ships came in overhead, and one of them dropped right down and flew right over us. And wow. And this guy just froze. He just froze. He was in such an altered state that I had to kind of snap him out of it. It was interesting. After they went by, and I said his name, and finally he looked over at me, and I pointed at the camera hanging on his shoulder, and he goes, "Oh my God!" You know? Like, and people don't realize what an impact this has on you when you actually see them, and it becomes real. Your whole mind just like starts turning upside down, basically, or almost blanking out.
Yeah, it is a shocker, that is for sure. Even if you're asking for it, or maybe even especially if you're asking for it. But you know, it didn't stop there. You would think that you know, it's one thing to have contact in the mountains where you're just kind of by yourself, right? But so that was around 1985, 86, things really, through the whole, 80s, things were really crazy for me up in the mountains. But then, because I was originally from Malibu, but I eventually had to move into the city to an apartment. I just couldn't afford to live in Malibu. My parents got divorced, they moved out, and I was growing up. So anyway, I was living in Santa Monica. And it's really crowded there. But I started seeing things there, too. And I'm like, oh, this is creepy, you know. In fact, one time I walked out of a Safeway, Save-On drugstore or whatever, and here was this UFO passing right over the store during the afternoon. I'm standing there staring at it. Nobody was paying attention. And I wasn't about to start running around like a lunatic going, hey, look, you know. But that was crazy to me. It seemed like, wait a minute, this is out of like a movie. How come nobody sees this stuff? Why am I seeing it? Nobody else is seeing it. I knew I wasn't crazy.
There's a guy, I have a guy that came on my show, God, I can't think of his name. It was a while back, and he's got amazing footage from Santa Monica.
No, they're there. See, that's the thing. Okay, so I saw this thing, and nobody else knew it, but that was just only one thing. Okay, so in 1990, when I first met Irene Chan, she's my wife, and the publisher of Unicus magazine, that's how we met, actually in Santa Monica area. And she just returned from Peru having her close encounters and started the magazine, right? And so we had a lot in common. But, I was sitting in my apartment one night alone, and I had the strangest feeling. I had just gone for a walk, but I came home, and I had this crazy feeling like, man, I got to go back outside. A totally irrational feeling. I just had to go back outside. So I went back around the block, and as I'm doing so, I noticed these guys driving down the street. They're in a pickup truck, and one of the guys was literally sitting out of the window, okay, hanging on, but sitting completely out of the truck, pointing up at the sky. So I was like, what's he looking at? You know, I look over there, and here's this UFO. I mean, it was really low over the city, and it was pretty large. And it was moving very slowly. And the craziest thing about this one was that it was glowing from the inside. You could literally see, like, there was levels to it, like decks in the ship. And so I'm like, whoa, oh, my God. You know, so I turned the corner, and I started walking towards where it was. So our paths were going to kind of cross. You know, if it had kept going the way it was going to my right, I started moving that way. Down the street, right? And the guys, like, the point of this is the guys in the truck saw it, okay? And so I see it. Now I'm going towards it. And I walked for a few minutes as it was moving in a certain direction, kind of north, across the city, very low, like I say, maybe, I don't know, 500 feet. And, I mean, really low over the city, and totally silent, very slow, and fairly large and glowing. It's just this warm orange glow. And at one point, it stopped. All right. And I'm looking at it going, gee, what are they doing? You know? And suddenly it started to get smaller. And I thought, whoa, how's it shrinking like that? Why is it shrinking? Then it dawned on me, oh my God, they're leaving. And because they were literally zooming away from me. You know, straight away. They were just, and it kind of, it happened so quickly, it just looked like they were suddenly shrinking. But they, at that point, too, they also, as they accelerated silently, the thing got really bright, really, really, really white, bright, white light. And until it had literally merged with the stars, it had gone from like hovering over the city to just out into the space. Into low Earth orbit, and twinkling like a star. I'm like, whoa! I mean, it just took my breath away as it did that. And then all I could think to do was wave at them, you know, like, see ya, you know, wow, you know, bye. And then I got this funny feeling behind me. I turn around. There was two guys standing out on the balcony of their apartment, watching the whole thing. And I couldn't bring myself to say, "Hey, did you see that?" Because obviously, you know, unless you're blind, you would have, you know, you clearly could see what was going on. And then it occurred to me, my God, what must they think of me? I got really self-conscious, like, you know, wait a minute, they probably think I'm like, maybe they think I got dropped off or something. You know, it was a creepy moment, you know, and we're like looking at each other. I couldn't say anything. They didn't say anything. So I just walked back to my apartment and I sat there and just like, I was completely stunned by this. I think it was 1990. I really think that's when it was. Anyway, just to prove a point.
Yeah, that adds up because basically what happens is, when they're in the Earth orbit or close, you know, close to the Earth, they use this kind of an orange light. And from my understanding, is that's the frequency they need to use as they come in and are affected by the Earth's gravitational fields. But when they get ready to go hyperspace or head on out, they shift from that bright orange light to the white. You know, that's the hyperdrive or whatever you want to call it.
Right. Well, these things often are called star ships because they look like stars, and or the star people, whatever, they glow sometimes. I mean, like I said, that radiant being I met in on the equinox in 1985, he really glowed. I mean, the most amazing thing, I'll never forget this, was where human beings normally have a pupil that's dark black, there was light coming out of his eyes there. I mean, God, it was the most amazing thing I've ever seen. And the most shocking thing is he said to me mentally, he says, "I'm your father." And I'm like, "What? excuse me? You don't look like my dad." I mean, if he was trying to say he was the heavenly father, okay, I guess so. I don't know. I mean,
yeah.
Do you have like an ID for that? I mean, is this other than the fact that he was glowing? Like, I mean, incredibly bright. Okay, getting back to what you're saying about the UFO, the frequency spectrum around the ship, it can go from, again, I was up in that same mountain one night after I, you know, met this father guy, and I met Alex, and we were going up there, and we were discovering these ancient ruins, and man, the UFOs are showing up. One night, I was up there with some friends, and again, I got that feeling like, oh my God, they're here, but I couldn't see anything. I couldn't see anything at all, but I was telling my friends, I go, man, they're here. I'm getting that feeling. I know they're here. And suddenly, as we're talking about it, this UFO, spherical UFO, appeared to our right, just over the military base, but actually it was very close, very, very close to where we were. I mean, literally, it was on the same level, elevation, about 3,000 feet. Mm-hmm. And it was brilliant white. I mean, like a snowball in the middle of a dark night. But it was glowing like a sparkler. I mean, it was like it's silently making, like emitting all this sparkling energy. And it moved from our right to our left. And as it did so, it went from white to red to yellow to green to blue to purple, and then vanished from our sight. But it was clearly still there. I knew it was there. And I mean, God, my God, my hair was just on end. I was like, oh, my man, they can put on a show. When they want to get your attention, man, they can really do so. And it was some sort of demonstration or instruction that was going on for us. And
yeah.
I can only imagine what the military was thinking watching that.
Yeah. I have to share something with you. I had the same experience. I had a being appear to me, and he's this Council of Light being, and he's not a being from here, definitely.
Yeah.
A radiant being, and he's told me the same thing.
What?
He said, "I'm your father." And, you know, he didn't say anything until after my real father passed, you know. But, you know, there was a crazy birth when I was born. My mom didn't even know she was pregnant, and I came popping out. And what's funny is my head's bigger than everybody else. You know, like, I can't find hats to fit my head, you know, which is making me wonder.
Well, wait a minute, with James, you know, you're one of the few people, and it seems like more and more now I'm meeting people that talk about this. When did you meet this person?
Oh, God, it must have been quite a few years ago. Well, actually, I had contact with him for probably 10 or 15 years, but the part where he actually told me that he was my father, and you know, I've done a lot of research on this, even a lot of the biblical characters, you know, also had beings appear, like radiant light beings saying, you know, "I'm father," or "you're from, you know, you're God's child," you know, and the same thing with Jesus, you know, a radiant light being appeared to him, and, you know, when Mary was pregnant, and he said, "I'm not going to marry this woman, you know, she's with a child, and I haven't known her," you know, he hadn't slept with her. And so this light being appears to him and said, you know, "This is God's child or my child. You'll rear him as your own." And he, you know, basically said, "Yes, sir." You know, and so this is kind of a reoccurring story we hear quite often if you go through ancient history.
Whoa. Okay. Okay. Well, the second time I saw him was, I know for sure it was a lucid dream, but it was still a form of communication because it was so real. That dream was, even though I was in Santa Monica, that night in that dream, I was standing on the driveway back where I grew up, on the house where I grew up in Malibu, and I had a kind of a I don't know, a joyous feeling of being there. It was a bright sunny day, and I'm looking out at the ocean and the blue sky, and I was just feeling very happy to be alive. And suddenly, three UFOs came out from the east, just out of nowhere, and they were, I believe they were golden in color. And they proceeded to go directly into the ocean. And I went, whoa, you know, wow. I got really excited by the sight of this, right? And I called to the house where my biological father, when I grew up, was growing up. He had an art studio where he would paint. That's what he did. He was an artist. Mm-hmm. And so I'm yelling at him. I'm yelling at the house going, Dad, Dad, come out here. Check out these UFOs. And as I'm doing that, it seemed like moments passed, and then the UFOs now had come out of the water, and they were silver-colored, and they returned back to the east, the same place, that the sky that they had come from. And then I looked back at the house, and because I was hoping my father would come out and check this out, because I say that because he's normally home, working in the office, right, in his studio. And instead of my biological father coming out of the house, it was like the scene right out of Star Trek. This being of light literally materialized, like out of a flash of light. There he was again, and I and instead of questioning it this time, I was so happy to see him. I walked over, and as I embraced him, I woke up. It totally snapped me out of my, you know what I mean. And I was like, yeah. Whoa, wow, what a weird message that was, you know. So I equate somehow what you're saying and what I experienced, if I understand this right, is that there is some sort of familial connection between us and the UFOs and their occupants.
Mm-hmm. You know, my understanding is basically they are ancestors, they're ancient ancestors, and there's a lot of kind of genetic tinkering going on to upgrade, you know, the race and assist people to communicate, you know, with the higher realms and dimensions to help out humanity. And I know you and I aren't alone. And you know, my dad was raised in New Mexico, and and he played a part in the Roswell thing. Actually, my grandparents did, and were fully aware of that situation and what really happened there. But he was telling me stories, and he was very quiet about. He hardly ever talked about it. But he had an encounter where they landed on the highway. And he was the second car there. It was a bread truck and him. And this ship landed on the highway and blocked traffic and everything. People were backed up for quite a ways and just sat there for quite a while. And he said the guy in the bread truck was getting really upset and asked him if he had a gun or anything. And my dad just said, I don't think a gun's going to help us here. You know?
Yeah. No.
He said, we just need to calm down and you know, be rational here. And when we were kids, he had an old convertible, and he used to drive around it, and he'd point up at the sky, and we'd see these discs flying. So he was fully aware of what was going on, but, you know, he was a dentist at the time, and, you know, he didn't want, you know, he was with the Rotary Club and all the other stuff, so, you know, kind of conservative. So you just, you know, you don't talk about that stuff.
Oh, no, not at all. But my dad was when I was born, he was just transitioning out of being a minister at the Self-Realization Fellowship under Paramahansa Yogananda. He was actually, back in the 50s, he'd had some of the members of the church were going to Giant Rock and hanging out there, right? Having sightings, encounters, whatever you call it. So what got me started as a child was that in my father's drawer in his studio office was a picture of a UFO that one of the members of the church had taken using a very high-end Leica camera from Germany on colored slide film. Okay, so in other words, the negative had been turned into a positive, so it was the original. It shows this UFO, this golden UFO, sideways over a tree in the Sierra Nevadas in 1957. And so I know that story inside out because, as a kid, I would sneak in there and look at it, and I would marvel at this thing, you know, and occasionally I'd ask my dad about it, and he's like, the photographer didn't see that when he took the picture, but it's there. And I go, how do you know it's there? And he says, well, because I took it to time magazine, and they looked at it and they said it's not a fake, it's not an acid splash or a double exposure or anything like that. And I'm like, and so in my young mind, I mean, over the years, it was really made an impression on me. Like, wait a minute, how can you take a picture of something that you didn't even see? How can it be there? You know? And oddly enough, many years later, when I was, I'd done a lot of research, had a lot of encounters, I got this email forwarded to me by Daryl Sims asking me, hey, here's some pictures of UFOs over the Capitol in 2002. Have you heard anything? And he said, what's your opinion? You know a lot about photos of, what's your opinion? And I'm like, man, I don't know. But he was kind enough to provide contact information to the photographer. And that's what started it all in the spring of 2005. So 6 years later, I have become... God, the world's leading authority on UFOs over Washington, D.C. That's nothing I set out to do. I just couldn't let it go, okay? The photographs were just the tip of the iceberg. I found, over 6 years and two books later, that there's hundreds of eyewitness accounts of UFOs being sighted in Washington, D.C., and that there was, 1952 especially, when they thought they were being invaded, and in fact, I think we were covertly being invaded by reptilians, according to the record, there was hundreds of people that were out on the mall taking pictures and movies, and all that stuff was confiscated by the military, according to Wendell Stevens. I interviewed him before he passed away about this specifically, and he said to me, according to his friend Augie Roberts, there was really a treasure trove of information that people had captured on film, but the military didn't want that leaking out to the public, so they canvassed the entire area and confiscated and classified all the footage. And so all we had was Augie actually had accidentally, or coincidentally, one of his friends worked for the news agencies and had taken that iconic photograph of the a fleet of UFOs over the Capitol in July 1952. And he gave a copy to Augie Roberts prior to the military confiscating the original. So, and Augie didn't publish that until in the 1960s, and it was immediately attacked as being a fake. It wasn't, or some sort of lens flare or birds or whatever.
Well, and they had jets scrambling over and over after these multiple eyewitnesses. It was pretty well verified.
I know, but I'm saying they've been trying to keep a lid on what the activity in Washington, D.C. for a long time.
Oh, yeah.
That's why in 2005 when I released these photos, see, because the photographer, Mr. Allen, Wilbur Allen, who had worked for ABC News. Prior to taking those pictures, he'd worked for ABC News for 14 years. His father, who had served honorably in the military, had just passed from exposure to Agent Orange. And so Mr. Allen... Wilbur Allen took some time off, and he was freelancing at the time, and he was actually shooting an album cover at night in front of the Capitol building when all these UFOs showed up, and and he was using a high-end Nikon camera. I mean, it was all top of the state-of-the-art professional stuff, but he was also using film at that time, and so one of the first things that Daryl had said to me is, "Well, you got to get this guy to let us analyze the film." And so we did. We had it analyzed independently. And that's all in my first book, Close Encounters on Capitol Hill, is that these have not been tampered with. These are authentic 35-millimeter negatives, and it shows an invasion of Capitol Hill by entities unknown. And years later, the Capitol Police actually confirmed to me not that particular event occurred, because it was kind of embarrassing to them that a squadron of ships can show up and some of them touch down. One of them's actually landed on the roof. It's as unbelievable as that sounds. It was temporarily landed on the roof, but in the middle of the night, the U.S. Capitol Police through the Sergeant at Arms Division actually did this very interesting way. One of their officers is married to a retired Capitol grounds tour guide, and so they used him to leak to me eyewitness accounts of their officers of these objects. OK, Okay, so here's what happened. He started sending me emails through his wife's BlackBerry that was issued by the Capitol Police. Okay, so I'm just saying it was all done in a way that it allowed for plausible deniability. I can't hold anybody accountable, right? Especially this guy's wife, because you know it wasn't she can't. Anyway, so all he did was he just said to me, I know these people are honest, and here's what they told me about two particular incidences where these spherical UFOs came into the Capitol grounds during the daytime, and they had to report it. Because this was the thing when I think this is really what got me in trouble. When I was doing the investigation of Mr. Allen's story, he said one of the first things he did, having worked at the White House and the Capitol for ABC News for all those years, and his family being involved in the military, he took his pictures to the Capitol Police, and they accepted that, and they actually opened a report, a file, at the detective division there. And I wanted to verify it. Well, I went in the front door, and not literally. I mean, I called them up, and I said to their press people, public relations division, hey, did this happen? And they're like, I don't know. And I said, well, can you find out for me? Well, who are you? What do you, why do you want to know? And I said, well, I'm a journalist. I'm doing it for who? And they were really on the defensive from the moment I knocked on their door, was trying to get in, and any information about them, they wanted twice as much about me.
Uh-huh.
So I immediately became on their radar. Not that they're bad people, but, they have to answer to other authorities, other intelligence agencies like Secret Service and others. It's a chain of command. Anyway, I immediately became on their radar because I was asking these pointed questions about a time and date and an event. I wanted them to confirm it or deny it. And they said to me, they got back to me a few days later, we can neither confirm nor deny this happened, but yes, there was people patrolling the grounds. We always patrol the grounds. Yes, we have security cameras. And yes, members can be in the building working at any and all hours of the day and night. Mm-hmm. I was like, wow, okay. That was a start. It wasn't a good one, but I think, like I said, that really got me in a little hot water with somebody. And so I told them I was going to publish the picture. So it was like waving a red flag in front of a bull. And I'm pretty sure that's why the black helicopter showed up over my house after I published the pictures in Nexus magazine. And uh-huh. Even though, I've got unicusmagazine.com, I wanted them to be in print because we're no longer in – the Unicus magazine is no longer in print. We did it for about five years, and, it just wasn't viable anymore. So, but we've always had an eye on, using the electronic media, and as you can see by my website, I've been doing that. So the pictures went around the world through the internet and I think Nexus magazine is published in like a dozen countries, a lot of countries. So it made quite a splash. And then later that year, oddly enough, in England, there was a documentary released. It features Nick Cook, and he is narrating something called UFO Secret something or other. And in there was 17 seconds of UFOs flying over the Capitol in July of 1952. It's the same, when you match it up to the still photograph of the squadron of UFOs passing over the Capitol, it's the same night, it's the same squadron, it's the same location at the Capitol. In other words, there was a group of people there. Some of them had still cameras, some of them had movie cameras. It's some of the original classified footage that somehow these producers for Channel 4 in the UK, which is a division of A&E Arts and Entertainment, somehow they got into an archive, and I think somebody intentionally leaked this stuff. And you know what happened? People said, oh, that's fake.
Yeah.
Just like the first picture. Oh, that's computer generated. Okay, well, so I finally
52?
Got...
52?
Yes. And I said, they're saying that this is, this was all just... because everything else in the documentary was computer generated. So yeah. I contacted Nick because I had interviewed him before, and he says, well, I don't know where we got that. He says, I'd have to talk to the producer. That was a while ago. When I finally contacted him, it had been a while since they'd done the created, generated this thing. And so he didn't get back to me, and I eventually, a month later, I contacted him again. I said, hey, what happened? And he goes, oh, that was just computer generated. I go, really? And yeah, and he's like, oh, God, I kind of blew it off. But I, something in the back of my mind, didn't sit right. So I got a copy. I found a copy. I sent it to my journalism partner, Mr. Allen, in Washington, D.C., who has a background in, I mean, he's got a master's degree in imaging, photographic imaging, and he works in Avid and stuff like that. He took that thing apart and analyzed it, not frame by frame, but, because, and that's the other crazy thing about it. It is, when you run it really slow, when you analyze it, it is literally an analog film. So tell me how they faked that. You know how old film, when you run it, you can see it, when you slow it down, you can see it frame by frame? So how in the hell did they do that, you know, with a computer? Or why would they do that? Why would they go to such great detail? There's other things in there, too, like mold and scratches. Yeah, I know you can add that as a fake, to make it look old, but not like this. I know film, and I know how celluloid ages. It not only gets scratches, it develops mold. And, you know, it leaves an unmistakable signature, okay, that is totally different from that fake stuff that the computer, you can add to it with a program. What was the other thing? Oh, the way that the light of the UFOs literally illuminates the clouds as they're moving across the sky. And, in fact, there are smaller or other UFOs that are hidden in the clouds, moving inside the clouds behind the fleet. And when this fleet passes behind the Capitol Dome, the rotunda, you can actually see the light bending as they move behind it. You can actually see some of the glow of the light coming around the Capitol. And Mr. Allen said to me, man, if somebody faked all that, they are super geniuses, and it would have cost a fortune to make something like that if they could have even done it, because it's just too good. Besides, it fits in with the narrative. Historically, that's exactly what people were seeing, okay? Not only on radar, but visually. That's why they were sending the jets up. That's why people were taking the pictures.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I'll tell you a little story here. We had A&E come out, Paranormal State with A&E, and they came out to do a special here at the ranch, and, you know, they put their sensationalism in it as well. But, you know, we gave them exact dates and times where these ships would appear and when, and they had their cameras rolling. And they came in, and they powered up and just lit up the whole sky.
Wow.
And did a nice turn about just above the trees around the mountain, taking off, and just incredible footage. And they aired it. They did air it, and they did give us credit. They said, yeah, you did say at 10 o'clock these ships would appear in the east, closer to the mountain, you know, northeast, and to have the cameras rolling. And they came right on cue.
Wow. Well,
we did that for ABC, Fox News, the History Channel, over and over we've done this. But what's really weird is I have boxes and boxes of footage of, and a lot of it's analog too. It hasn't been altered or anything. And then I had it all backed up too on an external hard drive. And this guy came who had some reptilian followers, you might say, that trash that, you know. That's a long story, but we're trying to resurrect that and bring all back together. But we've done this redundantly, you know, for major news agencies, and it'll be aired locally, and it'll take off, and it might go over California or a couple other places, and then it gets squashed really fast.
Yeah, there is a concerted effort to keep this quiet. And especially in the mainstream media, they're absolutely controlled. And it brings me back to my partner, Mr. Allen, having worked for ABC News. Who do you think was the first person in the media that he sent his material to? And they turned it down. ABC News in Washington, D.C. turned it down flat. And so he kept going to places like National Geographic, which is also based in D.C. They were interested. There was one editor there that really wanted to run it. And then, you know, he got fired. So that was no good. And so... Yeah. You know, Mr. Allen was getting really frustrated, and so he started reaching out to the UFO community, and because he was getting nowhere with the media, which he had worked directly in for years, had a lot of credibility, and the UFO community turned it down as well. And so, but Daryl Sims had the presence of mind to send it to me, And just out of curiosity, actually, he sent it to a list of people that he works with, and that's how I ended up getting involved. But man, it took years, and it took years for me to actually get this news out there in a way that people were paying attention to it. And I understand now why the skepticism. It's kind of frightening to people. They cannot believe, partly that this actually these events have occurred and nobody else would report it. They thought I was making it up, which I'm not. Okay, I'm not. But I'm simply reporting what I've learned. And unfortunately, in the second book that I wrote, released this summer, Covert Encounters in Washington, D.C., the conclusion is very, very disturbing, because what I learned is that there are these negative aliens that are here, and that's not news, but the fact that they are based in Washington, D.C. is news, and that nobody wants to talk about it kind of explains some of the crazy behavior of our so-called elected officials, because I think that some of them are clearly being possessed, and that's not a term I use lightly. I give examples, okay, not only of the demon in the Capitol, that everybody, you know, it's on the public record that there's a demon in the Capitol, or demon cat, excuse me. It's still, regardless, it's a demon, okay? It has supernatural paranormal power, and it only shows up when there's a national catastrophe, like 9/11 or assassinations, et cetera. So it's clearly involved with that dark energy. But, you know, the movie The Exorcist, the book, the movie, that was based on a real event that happened to a 13-year-old boy in Georgetown, which is part of D.C., back in 1949. Uh-huh. So the Catholic Church is extremely aware of it. It is the Vatican is actually the sister city to Washington, D.C. Mm-hmm. So there's a whole Catholic connection there specifically that I wasn't aware of, but it's all in the conclusion of the new book, Covert Encounters in Washington, D.C. If anybody wants to read it, I suggest you start with the conclusion, which I know sounds weird, but it'll all make a lot more sense why all this is going on covertly. The good guys and the bad guys are here covertly. There is a war that has been going on, a battle in the heavens that literally came to this world. And it's you know, the first casualty in war is always the truth.
Yeah.
One of the reasons we can't get a straight answer about this, about who's who and why they're here, what is the agenda. And the agendas are multiple. You've got the good guys trying to help us. And there are examples I give in both my books about Washington, D.C., of good guys trying to assist us in being rejected by our government. Which leads me to think that, you know, further credence to what I said in the conclusion of the second book. I didn't come to that conclusion, by the way, easily or lightly. In fact, I didn't even really want to publish that. But I felt it would be negligent on my part and actually borderline criminal not to inform people of this problem. I mean, what would be the point, actually, of me doing this investigation and then just sugarcoat it or censor? I mean, that's not who I am.
Yeah, you'd be just like the other politicians.
Yes. Or the people in the media. The people in the media are willing to acquiesce. They just go along with the status quo in order to remain in their positions. And I don't have a position. I am freelance. I am independent. I mean, you'll see that's a disclaimer on Unicus Magazine, .com, the website. We're not affiliated with any group or organization. We don't represent anybody other than ourselves. And unique is Latin. It means unique. And I don't know how else to remain unique unless you don't join up with any group. You know, you have to follow your own path, follow your heart.
Now, you've touched on some interesting things here. Now, in the UFO community, I've been very outspoken about that. And you know, basically, they eat their own. And, you know, it's full of disinformation people, and it's full of massive egos that think they have the whole truth, but they have a little piece of the pie. Yeah. And the competition is just fierce. And I've never seen anything like it. And when I entered into that format, probably in the early 90s when I got involved in that, I was shocked by the behavior and by the censorship and the in-house fighting and, you know, the disinformation that was coming out. And I know there's there's some people in the community that are saying, you know, there are no negative ETs, that they're all good. And you look at their sponsorship, you know, and you look at them, and they're pals with the Rockefellers, you know, and the other,
right.
You know, they've been running around with these guys and getting funding and who knows what else, you know, and they'll deny chemtrails and they'll say the 911 is the official story, is the right story. And, you know, you watch these guys, and you go, oh my God, you know, who are these people? Yeah. And, you know, and that's a good indicator, you know, if they are going with the official story, if they deny chemtrails and look at where the funding comes from and who they've been palling around with. And it's a very good indicator to find out, you know, who's who, you know, yep. in that program. And I noticed too, there's a lot of military intelligence involved, you know, with the UFO reporting centers.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the heads are NSA. They came straight out of NSA, or they came straight out of Navy intelligence, which funds all the black projects. You know, a lot of talk show hosts, things like that. You know, it's amazing when you really dig into this, you go, wow, you start connecting the dots. Mm-hmm. And you can see how this whole program is controlled. And, mm-hmm. You know, the information is leaked out on their agenda, you know, and so, you know, people like yourself that are bringing out, they're sticking to the guns and bringing out the truth and talking about the big picture,
mm-hmm.
and a more balanced view are the ones that are going to probably get the most censorship and the most flack.
Well, yeah, I mean, they sent a couple years into my investigation, they sent two times they sent helicopters. The second time was really frightening because it was not just one small little helicopter. It was the next time it was the double prop helicopters, and there was two of them, and they shook the house. They shook the house so hard, uh-huh. I thought it was going to fall down. And again, I was just, you know, I'm in a quiet residential neighborhood, and they were flying so low and so loud, it was frightening. And I was on the phone at the time. I was trying to get, I had found that Walt Disney had aired, remember I told you in 2005, Channel 4 aired this stuff in England. Eventually it came to the U.S. and they aired it here too. But I found out that Walt Disney, 10 years earlier, 1995, did this documentary about aliens, supposedly to promote their new ride down there at Epcot Center.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, but they aired this documentary on television to select cities in the U.S. on one particular weekend, and in that, they have it's about 8 seconds of a different film of UFOs over the Capitol at night, mm-hmm. and it's really compelling, and I'd read about it. I'd only seen still pictures of it, and I really wanted to get a copy of the film, so I contacted Disney Studios. I was living in L.A. I figured, you know, hey, can you help me out? So I spoke to the archivist. They're like, yeah, we've got a copy. No, you can't have a copy. Well, I'm like, why? And well, contact legal. Okay, so I speak to the legal department. And they say, well, we can't give you a copy. And I said, why not? Well, we don't own the rights. I said, who does? We don't know. I said, well, then how did you get the rights?
Government.
Well, yeah, I said, I'm like, whoa, wait a minute. None of this is adding up, you know? And so, like I said, I was actually on the phone trying to get that straightened out, talking to different lawyers when how to access that footage, because, geez, I would think, you know, is it still classified or not? You know, I wanted to get a straight answer because I thought people should see it, not just a one still picture from it, because that doesn't tell the story. I want to see the clip of it, you know, and so, like I said, I was on the phone when these guys showed up, and again, I thought, oh my God, I better get a picture because nobody's going to believe that these military helicopters are coming right over my house. And you know, they've tried to intimidate me. The first time I was on Coast to Coast in 2006, after the first book came out, I wanted everybody to see the pictures. I thought, you know, perfect. Well, after the show, somebody from Virginia, a company I won't name, went and hacked the server. They took down the pictures of the UFOs in Washington, D.C., And then they locked it up in such a way that I could not get to, couldn't repair the damage, and the people that owned the server couldn't even get into it. So I was like, man, this sucks, you know. And I eventually had to move my website. And but here's the thing: I persevered. I wasn't going to let that stop me. I was extremely upset, and you know, it may have temporarily slowed me down from getting the news out there. But I have been determined to get the full story out there. And it, like I said, it took me 6 years before I finally, approximately, before I fully understood what they were hiding and why they were hiding it. Excuse me, and that's now the information is out there. And honestly, I don't care if the media gives me credibility or not, because I was on national news once a week as an extraterrestrial correspondent, and it was they were, you know, kind of making snickering and making fun of me, but it was their idea to bring me on, and I guess, you know, for ratings or whatever, they, I don't know. And actually, they're based out of Washington D.C., but it's Talk Radio Network.
Yeah,
and you know, I mean, it was carried across the United States, and we talked about a lot of things that were controversial, but it was all tongue-in-cheek. And after about a year of that, I said, you know, guys, I don't think this is working for me, so I'm going to go do my own show now. Thank you very much. And that's when I started the Unicus Radio Hour, and, you know, it's given me a greater control over the information. And in other words, I can present it in-depth without any kind of censorship from producers or whatever. I'm not beholden to anyone at this point. And so we are getting a lot of information out there. And I don't know if you've seen the pictures, though, of this particular level of alien controller. They are large amoebas looking creatures.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Did you see that?
Seen those. We have just tons of pictures of orbs and light spheres and things like that here.
Yeah, that's not what I'm talking about, James. I'm talking about
the low-level stuff, too, you know, the astral beings, or I call them astral beings.
Yeah, but yeah. Have you seen Trevor James Constable's pictures from the 50s? The critters, the sky fish. That's what I'm talking about. It occurred to me that those things are what Carlos Castaneda's was talking about. And those things are what the Gnostics were warning us about. And so I issued a press release because I had somehow finally broken through and correlated that information to those photographs, because those photographs that Trevor and his companions took and that Wilhelm Reich was working on, NASA took the same pictures of the same entities. Okay, those circular things, they look like they've got a hole in the middle. Or a mouth.
Yeah.
Those things, according to Castaneda's, and what he was informed was, that those things are meant like mental parasites. And they do possess people's minds, and they cause us to do harm to ourselves and to each other so that they can feed off of the negative energy that's generated in the process. And that's what floored me was last night. I actually was exposing them on Coast to Coast. And, man, I guarantee you, the fact that we've helped, that I initiated this aid campaign for my friend Alex Collier, and that thousands of people around the world were sending him love and light and money to get him out of the hole that the dark side had put him in.
Yeah.
They got to be shaking in their boots, because he's coming back stronger and brighter than ever. And, you know, and then I get a call out of the blue. It was a last-minute, like, emergency. Hey, we need somebody. Can you come on the radio? I'm like, yeah. What did you want me to talk about? Well, what's going on? Oh, well, gee, since you asked, how about this? You know, I sent you the press release before, but you didn't respond. Mm-hmm. I've got pictures of mental parasites. They are part of the alien control, covert alien control system. The producer's like, what? I said, come on, let me walk you, take my hand, I'm going to walk you down this way, let me show you these guys, you know, we got to deal with this. Don't be scared, you know, we can do this. And and it was, I've done a lot of interviews on radio, James, and I got to tell you, last night, man, I'm still reeling from the fact that how many people we touched last night. We woke them up, literally. The dark side has got to be freaking out. We've basically handed them their eviction notice. We've exposed them. It's like, hello, we know who you are. why you're here, what you're up to, and we're not going to let you do this to us anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's definitely, you know, we're talking, and I know I heard you talk a little bit about the ancient times. They call them the Archons, and
the Gnostics, you know, did, yeah.
Yeah, and you can see in the temples, you can see all these different levels, you know, and on the lowest level, you'll have these really sleazy looking reptilian type beings and grays and things like that. And,
right.
And it's a real gray area. And then you go up and you'll see humans that are being affected by them, you know, and manipulated by them. Mm-hmm. And then the middle section is just your everyday humans that are kind of awake and waking up. And then above them are the, you know, the God beings or whatever, the masters, the enlightened ones. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they've painted pictures of this, you know, back, you know, thousands of years ago as warnings to us that, you know, these beings do exist. They are in the unseen. Some can make themselves seen, and mm-hmm. they've been manipulating us for thousands of years, and it's time for us to wake up to that fact.
Right. And so Trevor James Constable accidentally stumbled onto this with the infrared film back in the 50s. Then Castaneda's mm-hmm. had his experiences in the 60s, but didn't publish that information until just before he passed away. He, in his last book, he mentioned this sort of like, oh, by the way, you know, we've been invaded by these these beings yeah. from the cosmos, and we have to pass the test. Eradicate them? No, he said he didn't say that. He said it was a foreign installation in our mind, and that the boy, he was really being very cagey about the way he described
yeah.
these things and how we could, you know, part of the test was to defeat them in a way that where they couldn't insinuate themselves into our minds, mm-hmm. so that we could basically evolve. In my opinion, so.
Yeah.
This is a phenomenal thing. I mean, that we're actually talking about this, and that we can show people what these things look like. Because yes, everybody knows about reptilians and greys, and actually, there's demonic human entities too that
uh-huh.
they're part of the dark side.
Exactly.
And I think some of these people have said the insect creatures, the praying mantis, intelligent praying mantis types, that they're involved in this too, really covertly in the shadows. But
yeah.
But this particular amoeba-like parasite is something we have to. That's the first test we have to pass before we can deal with some of these other guys, because we can't be right in our minds, in our heads, in our hearts if we're being constantly influenced, covertly manipulated by these amoeba-like creatures. So it's just, man. I am extremely excited right now, James. I haven't had a whole lot of sleep because I was up till 4:30 last night,
and
I agreed to come on with you because I feel like we need to join forces right now. It's so important. It's so important. That was, and again, that's. I felt really bad. Look, I'm a friend of Alex Collier's. I'm not a fan. It's you know, there's a difference. I mean, yes, I appreciate what he's done, but my relationship with him, he's just my buddy. We've been buddies for 25 years. And of course, I felt bad for him. But part of me too, there's another motivation there, is that I want to see him get back on the field. They sidelined him on purpose because they know he's a powerful player, and that he can really wake up a lot of people, and has done that. So they slammed him and they took him off the field. And my part of my motivation was to not only because he was suffering, but I wanted to see him get strong enough that he could go back out into the field and rally the troops.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm all for that. I mean, we're definitely, as soon as he gets back on his feet and gets his self-esteem back online, you know, I'm sure he's been heard pretty good. Definitely want to get him on our show. We have two shows and get him both shows and I know other people too as well that would love to support him to get him back. But you know, it does. You know, the same thing, I went through something kind of similar, not as bad, but I was just totally disheartened with the whole UFO community, the news, everything. I go, I've got boxes of footage here. I've got ships flying right over the house. I've got thousands of eyewitnesses. We did an intention experiment. One of those beautiful, bright, pinkish red or red-orange ships came right over the conference building with 300 people.
Wow.
Involved, you know, Mary Rodwell, Dolores Cannon was here. You know, all these, just about everybody that's who's who has been here and has seen these ships. You mentioned Wendell Stevens. He was here. Bob Dean was here. Michael Salas, Alfred Weber with the Exopolitics have all been here. I can go on and on and list almost everybody that knows these ships are here, and we have triple PhD Boeing engineers and Air Force base commanders going on the record, and some of them actually went on coast to coast and testified that these are not ours. These are not back engineered ships. These are not ours. They said, we don't know whose these are, but whoever they are, they're extremely advanced.
Yeah.
And, you know, you have all of that evidence, and, you know, we've been totally shunned by the UFO community, just basically shut down and, you know, uninvited, you know, to any of the major events. It's just unbelievable. But, you know, I kind of went through a little bit of a depression around that. And I go, I can't believe this. This is what I think everybody's been waiting for, what they want to hear. You know, they want to know the ships are real, and they want to know who's on the ships and what their intentions are.
Well, not only that, we want to have open I want to have open communication. And based on the poll that I've put up on my website this year, the vast majority of the people taking that poll say, yes, we want to have open contact. We would like to welcome them here, because officially they're unwelcome. Specifically, the good guys are. The caveat is, we would like to welcome peaceful extraterrestrials to land and openly and communicate with us and have some exchange with us.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And this, I was told by the good guys mentally that when I asked about what can we do, and they said, well, invite us to your invite us to your planet. So that legally, ethically, and morally we can do that. Because otherwise it's going to look like we're invading. And clearly the bad guys that are here will take it as an assault. So That is the problem, and nobody's ever initiated a poll like that to ask that question. But you can go; it's free, it's anonymous. It only takes you a few minutes, or you could just look at the statistics for yourself to see. There's 7 questions related to the main question, which is: should we have peaceful contact with peaceful extraterrestrials? Should we welcome them here? Nobody's asking that question, and it's about time.
Yeah. What are the numbers that you're getting? What are the percentages?
Well, I don't want to turn on the screen. I'll get distracted. The first question is, it's rating at a low 90%. The people respondents are saying, yes, we would welcome contact with peaceful extraterrestrials. And there's 6 other questions that are related to it, such as what kind of relationship do you want to have with them? How would you feel if everybody was taught how to be telepathic? There would be no more secrets. You know, how would you, are you for it or not? What if they told us that we should help us outlaw war? You know, but still have some defense. Would you be okay with that? You know, it's questions like that. You know, would you welcome them to assist us to clean up the environment? You know, things like that. It just helps to clarify the initial question. It's like, do you want to have contact with peaceful extraterrestrials? Okay, what kind of contact level of exchange are we talking about here? Because they want to know. The good guys want to know this before they come down here.
Yeah, if you're, let's say you're in maybe 92% or whatever, other people are saying, yes, we want contact. And I know there was a Time CNN poll where 86% of the people said that they did believe UFOs existed and there was a government cover-up. So that's 86%.
That's not the right question, James. I hear you, but that's not the right question.
I agree. I'm just talking about the percentages.
Yes. I know it's very high. I cite those statistics in both my books, and there's quite a few people have taken these polls for asking this similar question. Do you believe? Well, yeah, do you believe in Santa Claus? No. But do we celebrate Christmas? Yeah. You know, this is a game. This is a game that's been played on us. Like they say about the Archons, they're masters of illusion, and they do not want to be exposed. They cannot handle just being straight with us. That's the only way they can maintain control is by through manipulation.
Staying hidden. I just think about the numbers on these polls, and if you've got 8% of the people saying no, to me it's a no brainer. Like, okay, who is in control here, and who is serving the people here, and which people are they serving, the 8%?
Yeah, like I say, this was really a big breakthrough. I wanted to do the poll when the first book came out, but I wasn't ready to do it yet, and I guess the timing was not quite right. But it's costing me like $20 a month to keep that silly service. But it's really cool because it works in real time. So you take the poll, even if you don't take the poll, click on View Results, and it'll show you exactly the percentages of people, how it's polling day to day. And it hasn't wavered, really. That first question has always remained in the 90 percentile. And I think that's huge. I mean, it tells us something. It tells the good ETs something. And I guarantee you, we'll hear more about it in the future. We'll look back on this and say, wow, that was a good idea. But however, I don't take credit for it. All I can take credit for is the fact that I actually did implement what they suggested. But at first I thought we would have to get like 51% of the population to say yes. But now I'm starting to see like maybe that's not necessary. Like when they take polls, political polls, they'll only ask like, 1,000 to 3,000 people, and they say they're error margin of whatever, however many percentage. But it still represents the country, the mood of the people. And I think we've got over 2,000, maybe heading towards 3,000 people have responded to the poll so far. And I don't know how many more it's going to take, but I'm just going to leave it there as long as it's not one of those things where, it's a question that, vote now. No, it's vote whenever you can. And please feel free to forward that. I've always encouraged people, if you take that poll, it's sort of incumbent upon you to pass it on at least one other like-minded person so we can get the ball rolling.
Have you tried to get it put up on Coast to Coast? Or?
Oh, yeah. And then this summer I did that, and, of course, the website crashed immediately. I didn't realize my contract with the web hosting company, it says unlimited, but it's not, it's unless you're spending like $50 to $100 a month, you can't have unlimited traffic. And actually, at Coast, they this is a running thing gag with them. They love to crash people's websites, I don't know why. It's just something that they do, because fortunately, it didn't happen last night, but because I don't know how many times I can do that with my current provider without getting kicked out of there. Because it's only like whatever, it's less than $10 a month, and I don't see any need to really. I'm not getting enough traffic to justify spending more money for more bandwidth right now.
Yeah. We went on Coast to Coast about a year ago. I'm not sure when. I'll have to look at it, but we actually did an intention experiment, and that was when Art Bell was still around. And
oh, really?
Yeah, and he really got into it, and he goes, I can't believe I'm doing this, but I'm going to do it. Mm-hmm. And they said, okay, we want to focus on, the benevolent ones that are here to help, and we were very specific about it. And we said, if you have a lot of fear and trepidation, or you have religious beliefs, that are contrary to this, then don't participate, and in this poll, because you shouldn't be doing this with fear. But we're going to, we had them send, just fill your hearts up with much love and joy and bliss and send it out there and ask them for, just say, I want to know, or we show yourself, make yourself known. And, it basically crashed their whole system there, because they had so many calls with so many sightings around the world and emails that it took them 2 or 3 days to recover. And Art sent me several emails afterwards, and he says, that was a tremendous success. He goes, there's no doubt about it. And he said the calls we're getting, the details, the information. And so, that was the one thing I felt really good about, that, you get it out there to 15 or 20 million listeners all participating, and you know, in that, I think that put a big dent in the door. Anyway, the door that's been slammed shut on them for so long.
Yeah. Yep. Well, I think that's what the dark side really fears most, is that we unite.
Oh yeah.
You know, our consciousness, when we do these group meditation intention projects, like you're talking about, experiments, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
it has a profound effect, because consciousness is energy.
Oh yeah,
it is energy. Okay, it's a very high frequency of energy, mm-hmm. and it is always guided by intent. Okay, and so the intention, if it's a good one, it usually has a good positive result. And so you know, there was a lot of group meditations going on recently with the so-called end of the Mayan calendar, October 28th, and then 11-11-11, right? Mm. So I had initiated something called the Soul Light Project, because Alfred Weber had asked me, you know, repeatedly to come on and address his audience. And I'd sort of run out to, you know, I'd run out of material, and I said, give me some time to think about, you know, what I can bring to the table here. So I contacted the Father, that being of light mm-hmm. that I spoke to you about. And I asked him, I said, what can we do to assist you? Or, yeah, how can we help ourselves? I mean, please give me some guidance here. I really don't know what to do next. And then it took a few hours or whatever. The next morning I woke up, and it was very clear in my mind that we should use those event times to target with our soul light the locations of Washington, D.C., London, and Rome on October 28th. And then we would also then visualize our intentions to send our soul's light to, on 11-11-11, to the three spheres that give us our life support here, which is the sun, earth, and moon. Mm-hmm. And so it sounded pretty simple, you know, and I went on. Alfred, we got the news out there. I don't know what the actual impact was for around the world, but I can tell you and your audience that on October 28th, I woke up before dawn, and I was doing a meditation. Sort of started my day, just saying, okay, let's get this out of the way. I'm gonna visualize. I'm gonna send my soul light to, you know, these three locations. Started visualizing them, and as I said, consciousness is energy. So as your mind starts to visualize these locations, part of you, part of your energy, consciousness, actually is there. It mm-hmm. goes there. It goes there. Well, I don't know what else to say. But so as I'm doing that, I had an awareness come to me that if my Father is this radiant being of light, then I'm a son of light. Weird as the dawn is creeping up over the horizon. I'm a son of light. And then suddenly there was energy just enveloped me. It was weird. I'm sure a lot of people can relate to this, where you have the energy running up your spine like a Kundalini experience.
Uh-huh.
That's not what this was. It's like my whole body, from my feet to my toes, just suddenly, poof, you know, I was enveloped in this energy. And only for a few seconds, and then it faded. But, man, it blew my mind. I was like, wow, what was that, you know? And it seemed to be triggered by an awareness, the realization of myself, because not only was I visualizing the Father of Light, that I was a son. If I said, "Man, if I'm really His son, I'm a son of Light." What, you know? It's like it flipped the switch, and, uh-huh. and it allowed the energy to just come rushing around me and envelop me. And then I recognized, wait a minute, yeah, sons. There's a war between the sons of light versus the sons of darkness, according to the Dead Sea Scrolls.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, wow, man, this has been going on for a long time. And hopefully we're coming to the end of the battle. And hopefully we win. Because yeah. I think everybody wins. I think even the guys on the dark side, a lot of them are going to evolve as we evolve.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're going to take some of them with us to the light.
You know, to me, I don't think there's any way we can't win, looking at the forces behind, you know, this event that we're moving through right now, the cosmic yeah. forces, the planetary forces, the, you know, alignment with galactic plane,
mm-hmm.
the Earth is getting hit by 500 blasts of energy a day. It used to be about 50.
Yeah,
they're measuring it, and you know, you look at what's happening at galactic core, that massive bubble of energy that is being emitted and expanding out throughout the rest of the galaxy. Mm-hmm. It just looks like a no-brainer. It looks like the days of tyranny are coming to a close, and you know, like good old Yeshua said, you know, he said that their iniquities will be shouted from the rooftops and no rock shall be left unturned. And I think that's the phase we're moving into, and that's what we're seeing in this political program we're watching right now, is that these guys are just ranting and raving and giving themselves away and showing their true colors, their true nature. And I think eventually, you know, the good people are going to rise up and just say, you know, enough's enough. This is just beyond ridiculous. And, yes. And stop giving their power away.
Yes, and the meek will inherit the earth, but they didn't say how that was going to happen.
Yeah, yeah. I think tyranny is going to implode myself. I think it's a frequency that's no longer frequency specific to the planet and, mm-hmm. and its destiny. And I really don't think they have much longer to run their programs, and they just implode on themselves. You know, they, yeah. you know, well, Roberts, they drop dead from heart attacks because their hearts are so constricted.
I know, but as far as the dark side goes, what I was the big news that I revealed last night about these archons is that once we recognize that they're here and what they're doing, it's incumbent upon us to control our emotions.
Mm-hmm.
At all times, do not allow yourself to have negative emotions. If as soon as you feel it coming up, the negative of fear, anger, greed, lust, any of that stuff, stop it. You can. You can use your willpower to stop it. Especially mm-hmm. because the motivation is this, James. If you know that that's making your enemy stronger, then why would you do that? You know. And this is the key. This is why they don't want us to know. Because they're vulnerable in that regard. If we cut off their food supply, some people say it's a drug for them, food, drug, yeah. whatever, that dark energy, we can control that. We can mm-hmm. literally shut it off. And once enough of us do it, these guys, there's nothing left here for them. Yeah, they can try and trash the planet, but I think at that point, the good guys will prevent them from doing that,
mm-hmm.
you know, because that's they don't need our permission to do that.
I think when enough of us make a decision, a collective decision, and are aware of what's going on and mm-hmm. and initiate help and actually choose not to participate anymore in these wars and all this other nonsense that's going on,
mm-hmm.
this power over others game that's happening, you know, I think that the other higher beings, the more we rise to the occasion, the more they can step in and assist, and we can get more divine intervention.
Right. Right, but you see the added dynamic of what I'm saying, how simple it is.
Exactly.
It's difficult, yeah. It's difficult to control one's emotions, especially when you feel it, you know, supposedly you lose it, right? You lose
yeah.
control. Actually, like Castaneda said, this is the test. This is the test of all, this is the subject of all subjects. This is the test that we must pass in order to move to the next level.
Mm-hmm.
So my most sincere desire is that enough people will recognize that this is something we need to work on every moment of our existence right now, is to not feed the dark side by allowing our by generating negative emotions in ourselves mm-hmm. or others. It sounds simple, but it's difficult to do. But if we don't do it, we're not going to pass the test. And no one can do that for us, because that would be a violation of our free will.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the good guys can't
be self-monitoring and become the observer and constantly
yep.
keep a vigil on our emotions and not,
yep.
you know, I tell people you can still address the problem without emotionally, you know, flipping out over it. You can do
yep.
it with loving detachment and
yep.
and say what needs to be said and keep your center in doing so and still not evade, you know, are not avoid responsibility of taking care of what's in front of you.
Right.
You know, there's ways of doing it, you know, but to scream and rant and rave and get pissed and angry, and it does, that just feeds the program.
Yep, and that's what they want. And that's why, again, I think that these amoeba-like creatures serve a purpose. They're sort of like pit bulls. They mentally go in there and tear you up and provoke us, constantly provoking us so that we'll generate that nourishment for them, the dark side.
It's like that Star Trek movie. Do you remember that when the ship got invaded by this life form and it was like an unseen intelligence and it kept everybody fighting with each other and it was just preying off of everybody's emotions, and then they all figured it out and you know, Captain Kirk and the Klingons and everybody, they all just started laughing at it.
Right.
Said, "Oh, we know who you are, and we know what you've been doing and why you're here. We're not going to fight anymore." And they just all started laughing at it and it left. And that's, you know, that's pretty much what's happening on the planet right now.
Yeah. Gene Roddenberry was not just a visionary. He was allegedly a Mason, a level Mason. And he clearly knew about the problem and was giving us a glimpse of the reality that we're facing without having to say, this is it. You know what I mean? People are really, because of the circumstances, you have to be careful. And so he was very cautiously alerting people, you know, sort of putting it into our subconscious mind, like, you know, hey, this is just a stupid show, but here's a concept for you to consider. You know?
Yeah. Amazing. You know, some amazing insights came out of that and warnings as well, you know, to really look at what's going on. And although it was just a movie or whatever, or a TV series, it really touched home on a lot of things happening here, you know, on the planet right now.
Yeah, and beyond this planet, because like I said, NASA took pictures of these amoeba-like creatures, right, swarming around the tethered experiment that they, right, the ball with the wire. But in getting back to Star Trek, one of the early episodes, they encountered an amoeba, the same amoeba-like creature we're discussing now, except this thing was as big as a solar system. And it was consuming solar systems, and it tried to consume the starship. And I guess they blew it up or whatever. But it was the same thing. It was feeding off of energy. It needed energy, so it was consuming, and that's all it did. And from what I was told by people, after I put this information out recently with Alfred's help and stuff, a lot of people writing to me with their own experiences and anecdotes about how to deal with them. But this one individual told me that those things have been genetically modified so that they will, they're more militant now than they were originally when they were created by the universe. You know, they're not just doing their original intentional, their purpose has been altered so that they're actually vicious now and doing this, you know, like I say, pit bulls, you know, they're just dogs, but we bred them to be vicious. And the same thing is true with these amoeba-like creatures. They're not originally, that was not how they were designed, but they've been modified. So even they need to be set free, which is kind of weird when you think about it, but the whole thing is, like I said, I think it's a test. I really think that we're being tested and on multiple levels, and that in a way, once we get beyond this, once we've earned our freedom, once we liberate ourselves, we will be much stronger and more capable of moving out into creation. And because otherwise, you know, I don't know how we're going to survive out there.
We had one teacher, I love what he said. He said, "Are you going to greet these challenges as a god or a victim?"
Right.
You know, he said, basically, who's your daddy? Remember who your daddy is, you know? And I really think about that. I just said, you know, that's what it's all about, is reclaiming our divinity and, you know, pulling ourselves up and just say, we have certain divine rights, there are universal laws, and start living by them.
Yes, absolutely. As opposed to the nonsense that's coming out of D.C. and the Vatican too. You know, that's not just a religion. That's a global government.
Oh yeah,
and they do enforce it. They do have their own way of and means of enforcing their world order.
Oh, yeah. All law goes back to the Vatican. You know, when you really do the research on this, I know Santos is a Bonacci. He does some great research on this, and we've been looking into it. And basically, all the law goes back to ecumenical law or religious law, and it goes back to trusts and that were created. You know, and they have one trust that says they control the whole planet, basically, and everyone on it. And it's amazing when you do the research on this. And so you've got them holding the religious power over there and the law. And then you've got the London bankers, you know, the banksters controlling the monetary situation. And then the U.S. has the military might, but those are all controlled by other groups above that.
Right. And that's why all law is in Latin. It stems from that global governance that's being emanating from the Vatican.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, one of the things I reported in my first book is that, most people don't know this, the original term for a psychiatrist is an alienist. I didn't mispronounce that, alienists.
Wow. Okay.
The reason is because they place a lien in a court of law. They can have the authority to place a lien on you if they deem you to be a threat to yourself or society.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and oddly enough, I mean, it reads alienist, okay, but when you take it apart, a lien, it's French, it means to bind,
Eliguer,
it means to bind. So they have the control to lock you up because they think you're not, you know, helping the society, you're a threat, and that you're mentally insane. So it ties right back into what we're experiencing is illegitimate, according to the psychiatry, the psychology, you know. But parapsychology, the book of parapsychology says you're not really fully, you're not having experienced being a human until you have paranormal experience is part of the process of awakening to the fullness of creation. I mean, it's so much stranger than we can imagine. And in the current form, whenever we encounter something that's larger than us, it does seem beyond. I mean, that's all it means, paranormal. It's beyond the norm.
Oh, yeah.
So that's all it is, you know? But anyway, it's a control thing. It's a game. It's like I said, it's a test. I think we're going to pass through this and come out much stronger. So,
I do too. Would you be willing to take on a couple callers? Looks like we've got some callers coming in. So we've got Ray on line two. Let's see if Ray can join us.
Yes, I can hear you. Hi, how are you, James?
Oh, I'm doing great. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Then again, I would like to say thank you for extending your show. If you remember a few months ago, I talked with you, I asked you to extend your show because it's very interesting. And earlier on, I just was hearing you guys. I don't know the name of your guest, but I'm wholeheartedly with you guys.
Thank you.
And he mentioned that he's a friend of Alex Collier.
Yeah, yes. Robert Stanley. Robert Stanley is the guest.
Yes.
Well, Mr. Robert, I was on my Facebook, and some friends that they put a note for me, or for everybody, really.
Yeah.
Alex Collier is looking for a job, but since his reputation with the UFOs and things like that, they would not offer him any jobs, any places, and he's sleeping in the mobile home. I was wondering if you guys can invite him to the show, and probably James can invite him to his ranch and promote his books or his articles and help him out. I'm unemployed myself, but I'm going to help him as much as I can.
Thank you, Ray.
I would appreciate if you guys do the same for him.
Thanks, thanks, Ray. I appreciate that very much. I'm the one that started the campaign to assist Alex. And,
great. I missed the first 20 minutes of your show.
Oh, okay.
So when I was listening to you guys, I said, well, I better let them know that what I just found out on the Facebook.
Right. Yeah. Oh, I appreciate that. And, you know, Alex, when he was lecturing, I don't know if people realize this, but he always had a steady job when he was doing that. Mm-hmm. He was not doing the lectures and the books for money. He you know, he was supporting a family, he worked. But at some point, yes, the fact that he the information he was putting out there got him in trouble, and mm-hmm. a lot of doors got slammed and shut on him, and ultimately it caused his marriage to break up, and it's been very hard on him. I mean, the dark side has been working overtime to shut him up and to really yeah. make his life miserable. And what I was concerned mm-hmm. about, that Alex was, this has been going on. He's actually been without work for a few years now, and he has no more unemployment. The state of California was talking about pulling his, revoking his driver's license. And, mm-hmm. You know, he was just in a terrible situation. But, Ray, because of people like you in the last week since to answer your question, I had Alex, we started this when I had him on my radio show at the end of October. And a few people stepped up and said, yeah, I'd like to help. But it wasn't enough. And actually, things were getting worse and worse and worse for Alex. So that's when I said, wow, I need to put more effort into this. And that's when I just wrote a simple blog, you know, explaining to people what was going on, how bad the situation was for Alex, and could you please help him? And man, once that thing started to circulate around the world, it blew my mind. And Alex, too, he said, man, I'm speechless, Bob. I don't know. Wow, I can't believe that this many people care about me. And so he's gone from absolute darkest hour to the most incredible time of his life. He has never had any concern for himself when he was out there talking about it. And all the love and energy and compassion that he gave to you guys as he was lecturing, it's all coming back to him now. It's all coming back to him in one shot.
They said whatever you planned, you're going to be sow. So
yeah, right. Reap what you sow.
Great job waking up humanity.
Yep.
I'm sure it's time to get rewarded.
Well, as I was kind of joking before the show with James, that we will probably be seeing a new and improved Alex coming mm-hmm. out next year and speaking. So right now his cell phone is turned off, but I'm sure that as he receives help from people like you and myself, that he is going to turn his phone back on, and he will be addressing the world very soon. And thanking everybody for helping him, and second of all, you know, doing whatever he can to now complete his mission here.
Yeah, I'm sure if James invites him to his ranch, mm-hmm. it creates a lot of publicity for both of them. James doesn't need publicity, but neither does Alex. But sometimes yeah. people keep quiet of their financial problems. They don't let anybody know they suffer for a long time.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's part of it, too. Alex is he has a lot of pride. And he wanted to, mm-hmm. He thought he could just fix the problem himself. And I thought, you know, initially I just sent him some money. And then mm-hmm. And then I said, wow, that's not enough. That's not going to help. So then I invited him on the show and started to publicly ask people, hey, can you help, please? And that still wasn't enough. And then, like mm-hmm. I said, I'm kind of surprised. All I did was write one blog about, you know, him, his situation, how bad it really is. And, man, it turned from a trickle to a flood of response yeah. from people all over the world. And I've been sitting here for days fielding emails and trying to help administrate this aid. I've never done anything like this before. I mean, I've helped people, yeah, but nothing like a global campaign like this to help one person.
We are instruments of the Creator, all of us.
Yes, true enough, Ray. That is true. That is true. Mm-hmm. It's a miracle. It is. I think this is the kind of thing that you would have to say was a miracle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We've already helped. We've sent him some money and also put it out over a massive email list and let so many people know. And he's just getting flooded now with yes. offers and homes to stay in. And so I'm sure he's going to be fine. You know, as Robert's saying, he's going to come back even stronger, and I can't wait to get him on the show as soon as he's ready to come forward.
Yep, yeah, I know he's got a lot. God, he's overwhelmed. He said,
James,
go ahead.
I just recently started getting emails from you last couple of days. I don't know why you weren't sending emails previous times, but it's good that you send your emails to people. Mm-hmm. At least I noticed I'm getting your email recently.
Yeah, it's crazy here. Our emails are going all over the place. Certain agencies like to grab them and shut down, and we lose people off our list. It's really crazy, but we just keep going forward, you know, and we tell them we don't mind you reading our emails. I mean, they all need education too, but, you know, please forward them in a timely manner, and sometimes they do and sometimes they don't.
Wow.
Well, again, just let you guys to finish your program. I guess it's ending up very soon. I appreciate it for all you do, guys. God bless you.
Thank you, Ray.
All right,
bless you.
We've got Robert hanging on line three. After this, I think we're going to be done here because we're going to have to wrap it up. But Robert, are you with us?
Yeah. Hi, James. I appreciate you taking me on the line here. I have some real important news to share with you about Senate Bill 1867. It was defeated.
Really?
It was defeated as of a couple of days ago. Now, this is a bittersweet victory because it allows for indefinite detention of any person that's not of the United States or a migrating citizen, so to speak. I think the problem with the bill is that, you know, we can't allow this to happen to people that's not of our country, because, you know, that will come back on us. And, you know, it's a travesty to those people outside of the United States, you know. But that's not the focus point. You know, people are relieved by the fact that this does not affect them.
Well, you just said it was defeated, though. So
it is defeated. As far as the main focus of the bill was indefinite detention of American citizens.
Right.
And that particular portion of the bill was defeated. I have followed the C-SPAN discussions of the bill, and it was defeated as of a couple of days ago by Rand Paul. So,
are you sure it wasn't? It sounds to me like you're saying it was amended.
Let me explain to what happened, my perspective on that bill.
Okay.
The original bill contained a text that would have allowed for indefinite detention of American citizens.
Right.
And they took the original text out of the bill, and then they tried to add that text back into the bill as an amendment.
Okay? I see.
Because it's just a card game with them.
Yeah.
It's a magic trick with the Senate. And most 90% of those senators are corrupt.
Yes.
Okay? And you know, so they're playing some card game with people. But basically, my understanding of the process, and I've read the actual text of the bill, and the bill that was passed does not allow for indefinite detention of American citizens.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so, you know, according to the information I have, Rand Paul required an actual vote on the bill, and they would have passed it otherwise, but instead of requiring an actual vote, he forced these guys to come out of the dark, and you know, some of them voted against the bill.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Well, that's great. I'll have to look further. I know there's a Feinstein or whatever amendment and some other things where they're trying to take those pieces out of it, but I haven't kept up to date. So I guess that's good news. I hope that is what's happened.
I'm 100% positive that has what has taken place. The
great.
Bill has been defeated. It's been defeated for Americans, but what about the rest of the world? It's a bittersweet victory.
Yeah.
You know, it allows them to detain anybody else outside of American borders indefinitely.
Yeah.
It's
still crazy. You know, we're still torturing people. We still have Guantanamo Bay, and all these things need to just go away and end, and with a big fat apology behind them. But you know, unfortunately, we're at the end of the hour.
Yeah.
Robert, thanks for calling. And
my pleasure, James. Good to talk to you.
And Robert Stanley, can you give us the best way for people to contact you to get more information about the work you're doing?
Yes, it's unicusmagazine.com. It's spelled unicusmagazine.com, and there's a link there to my email, which is editor@unicusmagazine.com. And I'm always posting new information there as I receive it. And you can tune into my show and the Unicus Radio Hour. And I really appreciate what you're doing, James. It's been a pleasure talking with you this evening.
Oh, you too. And keep up the great work you're doing.
Thank you.
And we'll stay in touch.
Great. You have a good evening.
All right. Have a great evening.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
All right, signing off, end of the hour. Keep your emotions in check and focus on love and joy and bliss and watch the skies. This is James Gillen with As You Wish Talk Radio, signing off. Have a great evening.